Indulge in all your holiday faves this season, knowing you're getting the good stuff your body craves with Ka'Chava's All-in-One Nutrition Shake. It's your post-holiday recovery kit with 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. And it actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you can even savor the season with their limited edition chocolate mint. There are endless ways to personalize your Ka'Chava, whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee. With every 2 scoops of Ka'Chava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code SHAKE for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, and use code SHAKE.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Welcome to the Rodcast. I'm your host, Dr. Rod.
So my guest today is the founder of WellBe Consulting and the creator of Health Work and People. She's a global health and benefits strategist with actuarial training, dual MBAs, and education from Harvard Medical School. She's led global benefits at IBM, Kyndryl, and previously worked as the assistant vice president at Aon. Her actuarial background includes work with the World Bank and the Security Ministry in Brazil. It's my pleasure to welcome Jacqueline Oliveira Sela.
It's such a pleasure. Thanks for all the good intro words. It's a pleasure to be talking to you. It has been lovely listening to all of your podcasts to get a better sense of what helps your audience and what type of subjects you cover.
Do you remember why you decided to go into actuarial science? Like, what was it that caught your attention?
It was not by design. When I was considering different careers, I knew I loved numbers. I knew I loved mathematics. I also really enjoyed the health and wealth and well-being, like the protection, how to protect people against risks. So I think that's like the key notion of how can I be curious about a problem and associate what it, is there a risk to be managed? How can I help people to protect themselves against or against disability, death, longevity, health? So that combination between numbers, the economics of it, the risk management, it was what drove me to think about actuarial sciences. So it's not, I always wanted to be an actuary. I was actually, at the time I was choosing my career, medicine was one of the avenues just because I very much admire what the profession stands for. Right? It's beyond do no harm. It's how to help people to be healthy, like how to help them to be the best they can be in their lives. That's my point of view. And I try to incorporate that on as part of what leadership is to me. It's like whatever, what I can do. So you asked me about actuarial sciences. So it's this beautiful mix between math, risk management, and helping people to protect themselves along the way. So naturally, no matter what you do, either if you work on a financial industry, on the healthcare industry, or hospital, like whatever career you choose, you are going to be dealing with people. And one of the lessons that I've been learning along the way, right, is when you are in a position of leadership, when you're managing people, this should become less about you and more about what can I do to remove roadblocks, to skill people so they can grow. So that on itself was part of a constant, just getting better over time. You make mistakes, you learn from mistakes, you do better next time. So the natural transition came through helping my teams to grow, like the teams that I was responsible for. But more so when I moved from Brazil to New York, like a few, more than a decade ago, and I started working. I had just finished my second MBA, focused on like the first one on finance, the second one on marketing. And I was ready to make a switch. And the switch was made for me I didn't have a choice. Once I moved to New York, I had to reinvent myself. I was no longer the expert in pension laws and health and welfare laws in Brazil. Now I'm in a different country under different regulations, but the pattern, and that's something that I think people with mathematical background, it would resonate well. Once you learn the patterns of how health, the type of products that I was working on, health, wealth, and well-being, why they were created. They are created to solve people problems. People problems exist anywhere. So once you are able to build what's the framework, what are the patterns across countries, similar to like to you, like you start, like when you become global, it's not that you know everything about every single country. It's that you understand which questions to ask. So that shift from being an actuary, leading a team for a very large multinational insurance company, and switching to now I'm in New York and I need to now, like, what can I do to leverage that skill set, right? Which is risk management. It was consulting. So I found myself and I discovered myself as a consultant at heart. And not just to help build different strategies for my clients that were Fortune 50, Fortune 100 clients, but like either I would be helping clients that were passing through M&As or clients that had buyout, I'm getting a little technical here, that were passing through a transformation on their pension plans. Or they are passing through, I need now to provide healthcare to employees in Japan. What is the landscape in Japan? How can I implement a program? Is it government mandate? Is it industry related? What is the employer role?
What would you say was a bigger, maybe shock to the system, the career change or the country and culture change going from Brazil to the US?
Oh, I love that question. The first thing that came to mind is, so number one, I was very lucky because I jumped right on a global consulting group. Right? It was my first job was with now the so-called Willis Towers Watson. At the time, I think it was Towers Perry. And I was thrown in to a global team. So because of the different cultural backgrounds, the American culture, the ways of living and working was somewhat alleviated. I had to learn, like, so I was in a position, even though I was very young, but I was in a position in Brazil where I had a team of actuaries. I had to move from being in a position of I have the pen to a position of I'm co-creating with an amazing group. I need to relearn some of my skills, and I need to be curious. There are a lot of lessons learned along the way, Rod. And back to your question, I think the immediate thing was Americans don't take time to have lunch. And when you think about the Brazilian culture, we pause. We work late, believe me. I'm not proud of what I'm going to say, but we worked many hours, weekends and whatnot. Not proud of that and not recommending that. But we would pause during lunch. That's the time we had to create space to laugh, to bond with others. I didn't need to wait for me to go grab here you have the water cooler conversations, right? And so that's the first. Like, it was the how people are interacting. And then you learned, well, they may not pause for lunch. Some of them, because they have family, they need to go back to, and they don't have the same caregiving structure that they had on their countries. Others, because they prefer to, okay, at the end of the day, once a week, let's all go out, right? Let's all get together and find a way to just laugh, blow some steam. And as I said, those are the relationships that I still to this date. Some of them became CEO of people analytics companies, others, like, they changed their career paths, some of them. But regardless of where they are, which country, which profession, we became friends, like friends for life.
I imagine, with consulting, there's a lot of trauma bonding going on, having to meet very high expectations from some demanding clients.
Oh, I love clients. I do. I have. Because the beauty is, once I have had the privilege of also working on a leadership position for like a tech company on the HR side of the house. And you get to understand, and I would encourage any.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Consultants to do so, you get to understand where some of their demands for time for certain deliverables is coming from, right? Sometimes it's bigger than them, and they cannot explain. They are not in a position to give all the details. So I think part of the consulting role is to be really curious and create space for your clients to be vulnerable and create space for trust. I think one of my favorite stories was when one of my clients, he was the head of Total Rewards for this multinational company, when he asked me whether or not my salary was, I will give some background later, but whether or not my salary was linked to the efficiencies that whatever we are delivering was supposed to create. Everyone, how do you respond to something like that in the middle of a big room and big room full of people? The room became silent, right, with that question. And he got the initial reaction that people were expecting, which was shock, right? And I paused and I answered him with transparency. And I said, one of the key components of my performance goals is associated with your happiness, with how well we are executing what we are supposed to, how well we are creating those efficiencies, but more so how we are serving you, how we are solving for your problem. Long story short, that client not just stayed with us, but expanded the scope of the work. But it's something that you don't prepare for that on actuarial schools or MBAs or any of this. It's just like really being present with the person you are talking to at that particular time.
Yeah. Well, you touched upon something really interesting, which is a big pet peeve of mine of the whole well-being, wellness world. And that is that because it's such a relatively new industry, there's a lot of, I think, aspects that have yet to be structured and formalized and standardized. And one of them is exactly what you mentioned, is there's a massive pool of offering. I mean, the US is the biggest market, as you know, in terms of providers. And there seems to be zero incentive for the providers to actually deliver a service that works. So specifically, you know, if I look at apps, there's a lot of apps out there. And if you look at the business model of, you know this better than anyone on how you contract those services. If I'm going to buy a benefit, which I hate the term because I think health should be a business critical aspect, but anyway, if you're buying a benefit for your employee base, it's usually on a per month, per capita model. So $10 per month, etc. A lot of times, like for apps and whatever this. And they sell it to you, and whether it works or not is not their problem. Like, the data that they will feed back to you most of the time is user metrics. So how many people downloaded the app? How many people are engaged, i.e. how many people after 6 months still use the app, and those type of things. You coming from a background where numbers speak truth, like, how did you find that working in that industry?
Oh, I love the question. And let me see how I can best answer. So absolutely. I will give you an example on mental fitness. And then I will take a step back, look, talking about health at working people as well. But when I started researching mental health at work, starting with what are the problems we are trying to solve, how it impacts organizations, how it impacts people, what are the root causes, and what are the opportunities for solution, either if it's flowing through education, it's flowing through care, the offerings, the different apps and other solutions, or cultural change. To the mental health space, just as these multinational companies, 5 to 10, when you look into US, over 50 that you could consider companies that are providing mental health services to employers. So how do you, and this is like we are talking about mental health, multiply that for every single health risk, either diabetes or gastrointestinal issues or musculoskeletal conditions. Can you imagine if you're sitting on that, like, decision-making of how to, like, the healthcare plans, they are reactive, they tend not to be proactive to prevent some of the, chronic illnesses that we see, right, impacting populations. So can you multiply that for all those different health risks? Can you imagine how hard it is to mine through this like realm of new solutions, right? All with good intentions, but how to really filter to the ones that are not just come to you, and that goes into the metrics and the why I, one of the whys I created Health at Work in People. It's because they come to your door with all good intentions, evidence-based research papers saying that they should. This is, I would say, basic for me when I'm working with a healthcare provider, healthcare point solution, is you need to prove that your existence is going to really solve my problem. But what is missed on that, on the corporate side of the house, is what are the metrics? Like, okay, you've proven that you have a population, you've tested your solution and it's working. How about my population? What are the metrics that you are using to prove over time that value is being added, that you are relevant to my population? And not just clinical metrics, but also some of the metrics that matter, that can tell a story to the employer that employees are now back to work better off than they were before when your solution was not here. So when I look at the new solutions come to house, very few of them can, on a timely manner, tell the story that how they are impacting my employees. The root cause could be linked to the manager you have. It could be linked to the environment, the type of reward systems that were put in place, and how they are helping to create that collaboration. And let's win together. We all have individual goals, but let's win together. So many people I talked about this that I share with me their frustration where they are not able to really do their job because they are spending so much energy managing politics, managing like situations where you should be working together and you are working just to save yourself and not worrying about how your coworkers are dealing with problems that you sometimes could be creating. Naive of me or not, I see the role of the future CEOs as chief well-being executive officer. We should not have well-being siloed as one piece of the HR. It should be part of the company. It should be part of how you are working, like what incentives you have to work with each other, ways that people connect and talk to each other.
So just for the people at home that maybe aren't too familiar with the whole role of brokers and insurance partners and health and well-being benefits and see if you agree with this distilled version of the whole ecosystem. But essentially, you have a big company with a lot of employees. They want to provide health and well-being services, benefits. But as you said, it's like an American supermarket. There's so many options and choices. Also, there's money involved. So you need somebody who understands how to get a good deal. And that's where something called a broker come in that can help you hire them and they can help you manage that crazy jungle of offerings out there. Do you agree so far with kind of that distillation? So I'm curious to hear your then going to a client that wants to, is genuinely interested in providing or procuring the best health and well-being services. And, you know, you do your due diligence, you say, okay, let me understand your population and see what you guys really need. You find like some great solutions out there that would really help them. But then the more you work with the client, you realize it's the equivalent.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first stepfather, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Of one drop of vitamins in a toxic pond that's killing all the fish. And that toxic pond is like maybe the environment of the organization. Like, what was your experience in having that conversation or being from a number-based background and saying, guys, this is what's killing your fish. It's the toxic, you know, pond. How would you have that conversation with clients?
If I'm asked, right? If I'm asked that question, so you got it. The ecosystem has consultants, brokers, and point solutions, healthcare, by payers, providers, and whatnot. Why am I mentioning all those different stakeholders, right? When you are working as a consultant, right? And I would think a broker should be also a consultant, meaning that they are not just helping to implement a certain insurance policy. They are part of the co-creation of why, understanding why this client needs this particular solution. And sometimes it's, you mentioned about toxic culture. So the way I would measure it, and I actually wrote one of the papers about like, how do you measure equity? How do you measure belonging? And let's say that the company, and I would highly encourage someone who is listening to take a look at that paper. It was launched last year, but the data is pretty relevant. I would look into disability rates. In some countries, you don't know why people are taking medical leaves. But if you can understand what are the root causes. And so I would look into disability. In some countries, I would look into death claims and be curious about what's the root cause of that. I would also look into the health claims and understanding if, particularly on the mental health space, whether or not there is an uptake in certain parts of the year or not, because that could be actually an opportunity for people to get the help they need. And why do I mention that? Because I have a story where, looking at the data, we are able to identify that a lot of employees from a certain business unit were taking time off, right? Medical leaves. And we are able to identify that a lot of the cases were could be linked to not feeling mentally fit, mentally well, right? Some of the point solutions, particularly on the mental health space, they are in a position to provide training to managers on how to, let's say, how to be an efficient manager and what is the role of a people manager, if not someone that should be like removing, like, as I mentioned before, roadblocks for people to be their best selves. And it's like, it's tricky because managers are sometimes sandwiched between the requests of the business metrics, like what you need to hit, and the pressure that comes from their employees, their direct report. So I appreciate that. So those are things that I would look into. And then once you really go down into what are the people problems you're trying to solve, then you need to match that, which solution could be solving for those people problems.
That's music to my ears, because it's so important to be able to actually have numerical data, actually have numbers from multiple sources, I think. To be able to,
actually. And I would add one, I'm sorry to jump in. I would add one more. Okay, you are able to find your provider, right? You make sure that that particular point solution or vendor or partner, whatever you are calling them, I would say they become your partner, right? Is that they are measuring, they are monitoring the results, whether or not the problems you have outlined it, if they can be measured, how your existence helped them to move from point A to point B.
All this experience you gained over the years with different countries and different industries, how is that all influenced, like, kind of where you're at today and what you're working on today?
I think it builds up to the type of work that I do, which is like, I always start, if I'm helping a well-being or a point well-being company or a point solution or a corporation, I always start with the curiosity and the data sets. Like the other day I was having, the data will always be there to tell a story. So you need to ask the right questions, understand which questions can you have at hand, prepare yourself so you could be uncovering issues that sometimes your client does not know. So the work that I do with WellBeing Consulting, it goes from helping to build those frameworks for well-being, which solution would make sense, or how to redesign if I'm working for a point solution. So here's a good example of a real story where there was something that I had worked on for many months with my team, preparing a business case for that particular company. The company had people problems such as a lot of fear. The company had just passed through a spin-off, uncertainty, mental health being top of mind for leadership, making sure that people are feeling motivated, encouraged, and bought into the future of that particular enterprise, right? What they're standing for, and they are revisiting culture and whatnot. And once I my team and I, we were able to look, when I was able to look into all the different people problems that we're trying to solve, and then whether or not we could create something that's sustainable, that actually aligns with the values that the company stands for, I came up with, again, not reinventing the wheel, but we are proposing at the time to create a space for employees to do good for others, right? And space for employees to volunteering work. And create the business case, how this starts, putting not just the voice of the employee, but the voice of the market, whether or not it could be like, it could be sustainable. And at the time, I'm talking about C-suite, right? Where I received direct Thank you, but no thank you. This is not the time. I don't know why we are talking about this. And there are so many other like priorities that we are trying to solve, changing the system that we are operating under. So I get it. We took the no. I took the no. It hurt a little, but I said, okay, now it's not the time. Fast forwarding, this was February. Then in June comes, and I'm in a meeting with same stakeholders. And then I heard, do you remember that project that you proposed months ago? Now it's the time to raise. And I said, okay, this is wonderful. Immediately in my mind, I think, who does what and when and why, like how I'm going to like deliver. Long story short, I took that new yes, right? So then we think about, okay, my next step was hands off the cake, keep the project and the team that could work on a project on a standby and be ready. So we are able to track, give or take, how many hours of volunteering were delivered by whom. So there was a lot of excitement and motivation for people to be their best selves. So again, we talk about little seeds, right? And that we are planting. And that was a good one where lots of work, no, then a yes, then hands on it, and due to an amazing team of people from different parts of the company, we are able to implement, create the opportunities for volunteering and create opportunities for people to be feeling a little better about themselves and what they are contributing to the world.
I think there's actually a lot of evidence that's shown the benefits of like volunteer work and purpose-driven non-work-related activities and how that boosts morale and organization and the rest along all these lines of like positive psychology. I hope more companies follow that sort of lead. I don't want to take up more of your time. And usually at the end, I always ask guests to give an example of something that they personally have found like recently that has improved their health and well-being. I think you already gave like some examples of that. So I'm going to ask you another question, and it's probably the hardest question I've asked you. So you're allowed to think about it, but okay. I'm always interested in cultures in different parts of the world, in different countries. I feel like there's a lot of untapped gems that you can find in different cultures, even if it's a very small cultural practice or something that people do regularly. And you see it and you think, wow, that's such a no-brainer. Why doesn't the rest of the world do that? And like a good example is like Japan. Japan has so many instances of things that you look at and you think, why doesn't the rest of the world do that? That's like everybody should be doing that. I'll give you an example. I went a couple of years ago and I saw that there was this... And it wasn't just one, there was a few. There was a few cafes over there where they had people that were either paralyzed or had some disability where they couldn't work in a public setting or in a workplace, but they were bound to be at home and they still wanted to work. A lot of them were quadriplegics, they had paralysis from the neck down. So they had these cafes that they could operate with some sort of really advanced technology. I don't know how they did it, but they could operate robots, and the robots had little cameras so they could see the people coming to the restaurant. The people couldn't see them, but they could have conversations. So they could control the robot. The robot would take their order. They'd go back to the kitchen, pick up the order and then deliver it. But I think the more critical part was when the robot would get to your table, they would talk to you. And there's a lot of tourists. So they would, you know, talk to you in English and, hey, what's your name? And where are you guys visiting from? So it was a great, like, little social interaction, and obviously gave purpose to the people, well, everybody involved. And I think that's a no-brainer. Everybody should be doing that. But what would you say if you had to think of, okay, what is it that you would take from Brazil that as a Brazilian-like culture is really good practice? And when you moved abroad, you thought, oh, wow, I had never realized we did that. And I think that would be something that potentially could help other people around the world.
Yeah. You gave an amazing example, right, on the technology, how technology could be used to create inclusion, right, to create belonging and help people to execute upon whatever skills and abilities they have. That's like, it taught me more than you can imagine being a caregiver myself. And understanding how important it is for people to belong. So thanks for that. When I think about Brazil, I think people will understand that technology, more and more, we talk about AI, the explosion of AI, and I see there is a lot of fear in the system. And there is something that to date, that AI cannot replace, right? Which is like the energy, the bonds, like that are formed when you really make time to connect with people, to talk to people, you know, just piggybacking, even though it was empowered by technology, but you are still having a conversation with another human being. I think there is a warm and a really intention of helping others, right? As something that I grew up with, it's like creating those friendship bonds and creating ways for you to improve others' lives. And either if it's with a smile or with a 15 minutes. Like I joke about when people ask a Brazilian, how are you doing? And you are thinking you're going to get the, oh, good, thanks. That's not going to happen. They are going to tell you what they ate for breakfast and what else happened with their day. Meaning that relationship building, the skills related to creating trust, developing trust that you can apply at work and in life. And we see the statistics with teenagers having so much difficulty to recreate those bonds. So I would not just the creativity that Brazilians have, and I think it's unique, but also the ability to be resilient and to smile and create bonds, create relationships that meaningful relationships that will last a long time, a lifelong.
I think that's so important and undervalued in the workplace, especially. And I recently heard somebody talk about how the little mini interactions in a workplace are. They're like money you put in a bank. So say there's somebody in the office you've never talked to. Every little conversation is like putting a dollar in the bank. If it's a, you know, a small, how are you doing? What'd you do this weekend? Whatever. Obviously, the more you interact with this person, bigger the amount of dollars that go in that bank. And the different interactions you'll have, if you have a very complex personal interaction, not a work interaction, it'll obviously be more than $1, it might be $10. If you have a problem one day in the workplace where there's an argument, for instance, or there's a very difficult situation where you have to have a difficult conversation, if you have $1,000 in that bank, you can withdraw that and it'll be much easier to have that difficult conversation. And it kind of relates to something I heard recently where a movie director, as part of his process before he shoots a movie, he comes from theater, so they have very incredible practices in the theater where they try to build bond between the actors. Because if you have an emotional or some sort of relationship that goes beyond work with the actor, it really reflects on camera and on stage. People can see it and it leads to a better performance. So what this director used to do is for a whole week, they would prep and they would do all these theater exercises where, like, one theater exercise is you have to, for 5 minutes, pretend like you're a two-year-old and you have to crawl on the ground and you can only make like sounds and you're with all these professional people that, you know, might have Oscars and everything, and you're basically acting ridiculous, but all those things that take you out of your comfort zone, and they're little dollars that are deposited in the bank, and they do all these exercises that are really awkward and stuff, and so it builds that bond and relationship. And so it's not about having necessarily to become friends with the person, but it's having enough dollars in that bank that when a problem then arises, you can withdraw from that. And I think what you're mentioning about in the UK, as you said, like when you ask somebody in the work, how are you doing? It's always good, or yeah, great, thanks. And then that's it. And then you move on. So yeah, I really like that. I think that's so important.
Yes, no, thanks for that. I love the example. It's making you see the person beyond the professional. I'd see the person as a person. And that little seed, the bond, it does create, either if it's with a colleague or with a client, right? With within the respected boundaries, creating that bond, you create trust along the way, right? Yeah. When they have an issue, they will come to you to have a chat, an informal chat, because it's not just because of the professional you are, but the person that they can sense that you genuinely want to improve. And if you're not the right person, you're going to build whoever needs to be with you to help your client and whatnot. But on a personal level, now think about those little seeds of treating people well, right? Giving a smile or making them feel good, even if it's for a split of seconds. Now imagine the ripple effect of that, because now that person is feeling a little better, maybe that will transform the way she's approaching the next person that she bumps into. Mm-hmm. Right? So you shift the mindset from anger, attachment. You may have the power to shift the mindset from anger, attachment, anxiety, frustration into something a little more positive, more constructive, more curious, right? And caring in the process. And if you cascade that kind of mindset within an organization, right? Or within a group of people, I would love to see now the ripple effect that can cause, right? And everybody that's benefiting from that interaction.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree. Well, thank you so much, Jackie. That's been great and super interesting and inspiring. I just want to thank you again for taking the time.
It was my pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening, folks. If you enjoyed that, please hit subscribe, like, and share. See you next time.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.